I always forget that I say the things in the intro, and then I'm like, oh yeah, so funny.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith Podcast for November 2024. I am your host, Jonathan Buchan, and I'm joined once again by everyone's favorite Joker, Mr. Tim Nelson. I mean, you are kind of like the Joker of the show, so I had to. You know, you're the funny one.
I do
one.
Joke, but the Joker doesn't tell funny jokes.
He doesn't tell funny jokes.
I see where you're going with this, John. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
I will tell you that, like, I can't tell you how many times I've been editing, like, late at night, and then you say something really funny, and I laugh to myself, and I didn't even catch it at the time, so there's, like, no reaction on the actual recording, but then I'm like, that's really funny, and it just went right past me.
We need a laugh track, John.
Right? That's what I'm saying. I've actually almost added laughter before because your joke was so good, and then I'm just silent, and that's...
So I could say a joke, like, say, tell a joke about a duck, and then we'd hear, like, ha, 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 ha.
That's terrible. Let's not do that, actually. All right, Tim, here we are. It's November. As we promised, quite a lot has changed since we last talked. We had an election, and things went down that I don't really feel like talking about, so that's that. I will say I'm very happy to not be having 10 texts a day about... donations. I think we could all agree on that, right? That's a bipartisan.
Man, it got out of hand.
Really bad. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm in a swing state, so it's like 10 times worse for Wisconsin. I mean, it was
every
other
second.
Oh, I
bet it is. Oh, that's probably why, because I have a Wisconsin area code.
There you go.
So I was getting things like, oh, hey, friend. I'm like, who's this?
I know. I know. I love it. It's like, hey, it's Kamala. And I'm like, well, hey, girl. Thanks for sliding
in. No, it wasn't. It wasn't Kamala. It was a robot.
Oh, well, I had all of them. I had Kamala. I had Tim. I had Trump texting me personally. It was fantastic.
What did he tell you?
Me. Oh, he was like, oh, they're coming. They're at the border. You got to chip in $10. $10.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't get all of them. I got some of them. But they would say things like, somebody's trying to do this. We have to stop them.
We have to. Yeah.
And it was always money.
We'll do it. Money. Yeah.
It was always the money
need.
That would stop them. Yeah.
Yeah. But let's move on, because I really don't want to get into that. So,
you seem a little sour, a little salty.
No, not sour, not salty.
You're like, well, a margarita.
Yeah, yeah, actually I am. I'm a little concerned for the state of things, but I really don't want... I've just spent so much time thinking about it that I'm kind of at the point where it's time to just sort of shelve that for a while and take a break.
You want to push it all down? Mm-hmm. Then have it explode maybe mid-May?
Mid-May.
Is that what you're thinking? Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. In a few months. Let's just get through the holidays.
I'm going to ask a favor of you.
Yeah?
Whatever you do, can you promise not to storm the Capitol?
Oh, I will not storm the Capitol. Absolutely
right.
Not.
I appreciate
But I don't think
that.
We need to, because apparently all of our election fraud was fixed. You know, it's all good.
That's good to hear.
They fixed all right. It all. So, haven't heard a thing about it. It's great. Should cut that. All right. Of course, the other...
You should never have a political opinion, John.
I know.
That would be terrible.
All right. Now, the other exciting thing about November that I do want to talk about is Thanksgiving. And as fate would have it, Tim, I am currently planning on releasing this show the day before Thanksgiving, which is actually a rarity. So our listeners will be hopefully listening to this the day before Thanksgiving. So I don't know what else there is to talk about. We always talk about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and we talk about turkey, and we talk about football. Do you have anything else to add to the Thanksgiving banter?
No, I think we talked about like... On the day after Thanksgiving, instead of Black Friday, you can just go to the movies.
Which is way better than participating
in
Black
Friday.
It's way
better.
You're still helping the economy or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, yeah, you're watching a movie. It's good.
I do have something to bring up to you, John, about the holiday movie season that's coming up. Is it this Gladiator 2 movie is coming out?
Yeah, what do you think about that? I'm a little skeptical.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm like excited, but I think really just excited about myself when I was like in my 20s watching Russell Crowe when he was in his 40s.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm going to watch Russell Crowe in his, like, 60s, and I'm in my 40s.
Wait, is Russell Crowe in this?
Well, I have no idea.
I don't think he is. I don't think, unless he has a cameo.
Is he going to train gladiators? I like that idea.
It's Paul Mescal. It's Denzel Washington and Pedro Pascal.
Well, Oh, I like him.
Yeah, they're great. So I've not, now he might make a surprise appearance, but I have not heard his name floated around. But I was 15 when Gladiator came out. This was 2000. And it was a big moment because, like, when you're 15, you know, it's like, you know, and then you're growing up a Christian. It was basically like, hey, you can definitely go see the really bloody violent movie as long as there's no sex in it. So my mom was like, sure, go ahead. So I went with
my. Is there no sex in Gladiator?
No, there isn't. So it was I think we almost went as a whole youth group. We're like, yeah, let's go see some heads chopping off. And it's great. So I remember, I really do think I went with my youth leader, but that's okay. It was a big movie for me because I was 15 and I was digging it. Now, in retrospect, is it still a good movie? I don't know. I have not seen that in probably 15 years. I would like to revisit it, maybe. Is it still, does it stand up?
I don't know. But anyway, it's coming out. It's here. Coming out soon. It's not here. It will be here. And it was something I was thinking about seeing.
You should see it. You should report back on the next episode and tell me how.
You're saying that we're not reviewing it is what I'm hearing you right
we're
now.
We're not.
No, absolutely not. Okay.
We're not all reviewing right, it because we're going to get into the Oscar stuff, man. Like, we are, like, in it now. Like, the next movie we're going to pick from here on out, the next movies are just going to be award stuff. We have to.
I feel like there hasn't been an Oscar movie yet. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think so. No, I don't think we've watched like a... Well, here's what I'll say, Tim. This has been a fantastic year for movies. Like, I already have given out about 4 A's, so which is very rare this early, and that's before the Heart of Awards season. So they may not be movies that show up on the Oscar nominations, but I have dug a lot of movies this year, and it's been a good showing.
Mm.
So there you go. Enjoy Thanksgiving. Enjoy your turkey. Watch some football. Do not talk about politics with your in-laws.
Or do, but not at my house, please. Thank you.
Tim, enough shenanigans. Our listeners only care about one thing, and that's what we've been watching. So I want to hear it. Have you been watching anything? Is there anything new in your world? Anything?
Nothing really new. I've been trying to finish The Sopranos.
Yes. What season are you in now?
4 or 5, I think.
Okay.
It's taking me a while. It's a lot.
I remember it holding up. Like, I don't remember there being any super weak seasons, so it's still good, right?
I think so. I mean, people use, like, regular phones and stuff in the show. But what I didn't realize is I watched Goodfellas again.
Love it. Great
and
movie.
I did not realize how much they basically stole the entire cast of Goodfellas
yeah,
in order to make that movie. I mean, that's... Like, I didn't realize that the love interest... I mean, the wife in Goodfellas is the psychiatrist. The therapist,
definitely.
Yes. Yep. And then I didn't realize that Spider in Goodfellas is the nephew in Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
And then a whole bunch of, like, you know, the dudes that look like caricatures.
Right. And then all the background players, they're just like, oh, we'll just take all of you. Thank you very much. Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Now I'm like, oh my gosh, wow.
I was just talking about Goodfellas with Kyle Burnt because we had our game day yesterday. He did not like fully appreciate it. He said it was good, but not that great of a movie. Overrated. Strongly disagree. That is a classic. Goodfellas is a classic.
He's got no taste, clearly. Clearly, Kyle, you're wrong.
Wrong.
This movie has been identified by so many different people across the spectrum.
Yep.
As being a good film. Now, it does have a lot of narration, but it goes in and out of narration.
I think it's good voiceover, and I like that they change perspectives, and I think it's the proper use of voiceover. Yeah.
Yeah.
So many good moments. Joe Pesci, come on. Mm-hmm. Come on. Do I amuse you, my clown?
Do I make you laugh?
That's what's so terrifying about all of the mob movies is, like, your best friend will look you in the eye and say, no, we're good, we're good. And then he'll shoot you in the head. You can't trust anyone. That just sounds too scary to me. No, thanks.
I'm not very good at it, probably.
Nah. All right, Tim. Well, I've got a couple things to talk about that I'm pretty psyched about. So around October, I usually do like a scary show. And this year I picked a show that I think everyone's already seen because it came out a couple years ago, but it was the Dahmer Show on Netflix. Did you ever get around to that?
I don't think I've seen it, so I'm really curious.
It was so good, Tim. And there was a lot of backlash at the time because people were saying that it, like, was disrespectful to the victim somehow, which I honestly don't understand because they really take time to dive into the victims' like lives and like empathize with them and like the horror of it. And he had this like next door neighbor who just knew that terrible stuff was happening in that apartment complex. She could hear the sounds, she could hear the see the or smell the awful things coming out of the vent, and she called the cops for like like all the time for like years, and they didn't do anything. And so
it's Milwaukee, right?
Yeah, Milwaukee. Like 5 minutes from my house, Tim. That's what's so scary.
Are you
this
serious?
This apartment complex that Dahmer killed like 13 people in this apartment is like 5 minutes from my house. Now, they did raise the apartment, so it's gone. But like, I haven't even worked up the courage to go over there, because it's just, I do believe that when terrible things happen, like evil, like murder, like it does leave a little bit of an imprint. And I was like, I was almost gonna do it, but then I'm like, ugh, it's so creepy.
Is it creepy that you would do it? Maybe
creepy that I would go. It's almost
like doing murder,
exploitative.
Doing some murder murder terrorism.
Yeah. No, totally. And they even do that in the show. Like, there's some people that show up to take pictures in front of the place, and the neighbors are like, this is my house. Like, what are you doing? Yeah.
Get out, you weirdos.
Yep. Don't do it. I didn't do it, and I don't think I will. I think it's just inappropriate. But Evan Peters, who plays Dahmer, gives one of the most haunting performances I've ever seen. I'll never forget it. I just can't stop thinking about it. There's something about his eyes, his cadence, the way he talks, the way he acts. It is just tapping into something that is really, really creepy. And he won a Golden Globe for it, so I mean, like, he got some recognition, and that's rightfully deserved. But it's really one of the best things I've ever seen, so I would watch it for him, his performance. And it's also, I think what maybe people had a problem with when it comes to the whole victims thing was that they do treat him as a three-dimensional character. They kind of get inside his head a little bit. They try to identify what he, you know, that he really did want love, but like, he was obviously the way he pursued that was terrible. And so I don't know if just the slight sympathy or the empathy for him was part of the problem, but there's a lot of backlash, but I stand by it. Watch Dahmer on Netflix. I would
so recommend. Are you saying that we ought to have empathy for certain sociopaths?
I think we should have empathy for everyone. Everyone, because everyone is made in the image of God. And I think one of the big mistakes we make is to write someone off, to just be like, that person is a two-dimensional monster, and we should throw them in jail and throw away the key, and they don't exist anymore. When in reality, we are supposed to believe in a God that can raise the dead, and I think that includes people, right? So I don't think we should give up on anyone. I really don't.
Okay.
Now, some people need to be separated from society. Don't get me wrong. But we should still hope for change.
So you're watching this murder porn.
Yes.
You've come out with this moralism. Now.
I know. Okay. And then real quick, two movies that I have seen recently that I gave an A to, Tim. And they're both horror movies. And you know me. I love the genre. And they're horror thriller. And I definitely don't want to give just a blanket recommendation. You got to know if you're prepared for this. It's extreme content. Both movies have very extreme content. So I don't want to be the person that was like, John recommended this and it was terrible. Do your own research. However, I want to give a huge shout out to two movies. They both came out this year. First, The Substance, starring Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley. Basically, the premise is that Demi Moore is this aging actress, and she's being shunned out of Hollywood because she's too old and irrelevant now. And she learns about this substance she can take that creates a younger version of her. And that is the premise. I don't want to give any more than that. But think The Fly, if you want to think like in that vein,
okay, all right.
With
yeah,
Jeff
yeah,
Goldblum,
yeah.
But like 10 times more gory and disturbing. That's what you're going to get with The Substance. And it is very good and has a lot of good satirical commentary on beauty culture, how we discard people when they get too old and value the young and all that. And it's very, very good.
John, this kind of brings up a point I've been thinking about, which is,
yes.
Are you thinking about getting rid of me?
No, I'm always worried you're going to be like, I can't do it anymore.
But
so,
I'm getting older. I'm getting older, John.
You're not that old. Come on.
And
Timmy.
I don't know if I have the same beauty that a podcast I used to have when we used to podcast.
We don't need to be beautiful. We're not on YouTube.
Oh.
We're never going to be on YouTube. Ugh.
I used to be like a fragrant young flower.
I know. It is true. But like, I heard someone say recently, which I agree with, that like, it's so dumb that when we demonize the old, because we're all going to be there someday. Like, why would you ever do that? Like, we're all headed there. So why would you?
Not like, everybody. Some people die young.
Okay. Well, sure.
Should they have the right to demonize the old?
If you're for sure going to die young, how would you ever know?
Because they're ultra jelly.
Uh-huh. All right, so that's The Substance. And then lastly, I want to give a shout out to a movie called Strange Darling, which I just watched last night.
Oh.
So good, Tim. I don't want to give anything away, but it is the caption says it is a thriller told in 6 chapters, and those chapters are out of order, and the way that they tell the story keeps the twist coming. You think it's this, then it's this, then it's this, and it gets you all the way to the end and then lands the plane.
Don't say it.
So good. So good. And do you know who does the cinematography for this movie in his first time ever doing cinematography? Giovanni Ribisi. First time cinematographer for this film, and okay. He kills it, and it's so good. Even in the caption at the very beginning, it says shot entirely on 35 millimeter film, like they're proud of it, and it looks gorgeous, and he did the camera for them. I don't know.
That's cool, man. And what's it called again so we can watch it?
Strange Darling. Watch it, Tim. Promise.
Strange Darling.
Promise. Yes. Very, very, very good. So there you go. The Substance and Strange Darling. Again, extreme thrillers and horrors for the content, but I gave both an A. And this year, that's what I'm saying. I saw the TV Glow. I gave an A to these two movies. And then you throw in like Dune Part 2. I watched Furiosa, that Mad Max movie, which was actually really good and my favorite Mad Max movie I've ever seen. Hitman, Civil War. This has been a good year for movies, and we aren't even in award season yet.
Civil War has grown on me.
See?
It really has grown on me, because I liked it, but now I'm like, man, this might be one of the best movies of the year.
Yep, I think so. I think it's going to stay in my top 10. I gave it an A-. I think it'll still be there.
All right.
So, yeah, those are my recommendations. And now let us move on to the reason we are here today, as Tim is very excited to talk about Joker, Folie à Deux. All right. First, let's talk about our theater experience. Tim, when did you catch this movie and what was that like?
I want to tell you about my theater experience, John.
I want to hear it.
I had to change a shift at work. And so I was going to watch it like at 7 something at night. And then I had to change the shift. So I went to go look at the movie times again and it didn't exist.
Oh no, it was gone because it went to streaming real fast. It did. Yeah.
It was there like 2 days after it was in the movie theater. So I went to streaming and I paid $25 so I could watch it anytime I want. Yes, so now I own this movie, John.
Forever. You can revisit it anytime you want. That's so nice.
Or not at all. I can just be like, oh, yeah, that's where that $25 went.
I'm so sorry, Tim. That's tragic.
Don't be sorry.
Hey, don't worry. It's a write-off. Just kidding. We're not making any money.
It's not a write-off. Wouldn't that be good, though? You could write them all off. Roger Ebert probably wrote them all off.
Oh, you probably wrote them all off.
He probably just had
turned
his receipts in.
Popcorn write-off. Yeah, absolutely.
But that was my theater experience. I was with my son. So it was the same as if we had both gone money-wise. And we watched it, you know, just in the living room.
In the living room, okay. And yeah. You mentioned that your son was not a fan of this film.
So he said, Dad, is this a musical? And I said, I'm not sure exactly, even though I knew kind of it was. Mm-hmm. And I said, because I knew if I said yes, he'd be,
instantly
make teenage noises. And yeah, he'd be doing that.
Yep.
So he's like, is there action? I said, I bet there's action. But there really, really wasn't.
There wasn't a lot of action.
There really wasn't a lot of action, which is kind of a problem. And so he sat through this long movie. I mean, it's what, 210
two and
or
a
something?
Half,
or
two, something like, somewhere around there.
Gosh. Yeah, it's just this long movie. So my theater experience was I did have apple crumble with ice cream.
That sounds great.
I made it myself, and it was
you
warm.
Did? Wow.
Right before we watched it. Yeah, that was the idea.
And the apple crumble, I'm assuming, was better than the movie, in your opinion.
Oh, yeah. Way better. I'm podcasting from my basement, and there's a squirrel with a half tail and then two deer that just walk by. We're in fall.
Wow. At my office, I always see a family of deer. They're great.
Aww.
And I love your place downstairs. Yeah, you can see a lot of good nature stuff. There was that horrific creature that, remember when I was on that walk at your place and that was like that crazy, ugly, what do you call that thing?
A possum?
Yeah, I think so. But like that face was terrifying and it was going to attack me, Tim. It really was.
The official marsupial of North America, a possum. Looks like a giant rat.
Yeah. Yeah. Big. Mm-hmm. Bigger than expected.
I think it's interesting you've never seen a possum until just then.
I really don't think I did. But I was just alarmed because I almost walked right into it. Anyway. Okay. My experience was that I went out with our old friends, Tim. First of all, do you remember, did we see the first Joker together? Like, did you go with me to the theater?
I think I did.
That's what I thought too. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then this was a reprise of what we did, except of course, sadly, you weren't there.
Neither were any quality elements in a movie.
Yeah, well,
for the second
we'll
round.
See. I still have things to get to on the quality front. But Dan Baker and Dave McDonald, the old gang, we went for my birthday. They're so gracious. They go out with me every October to a movie and dinner. And we did it. We went out.
Did you get the walk?
Yep, yep. We went to Hoo Hot, and they did the, you know, the ladles and the people and the thing. Yeah, very authentic.
What's it called? Hoo Hot?
Hoo Hot. It used to be called Mongolian Barbecue, and then...
The Mongolians were, like, super angry about it, probably.
Definitely.
They're like, we don't eat this food. This is a misrepresentation.
It's basically the same thing, though. I love it. You put a bunch of raw stuff in a bowl and sauces, and then they cook it. What's not to love about that? So we did that, and we saw the movie. Now, it was mostly an empty theater, except at the very last minute, a couple people did show up to go to the front. But it was so bizarre, because it's like a Saturday. It was still very early in its coming out, and it was like a Saturday afternoon. There was no one there. So that was weird. And then we actually enjoyed it, Tim. We enjoyed the film, and I will tell you why later, why I think it's not worthy of the bashing that most people have given it. But overall,
did you possibly go into the wrong movie?
No.
Is that why you enjoyed it?
Definitely the right movie.
Okay, just checking.
I know. So that was my theater experience, and here we are to talk about the movie. So let's start with some acting. Maybe we can at least agree on these things, that Joaquin Phoenix is a good actor. I think we both love him. And let's see. Well, we were just talking about Gladiator. I'm so glad you brought it up. That was Joaquin Phoenix's like first huge role. You remember that. He played...
Yeah, he's great.
Caesar.
He's so hateable.
Hateable, yeah. I remember his line, for whatever reason, where he says, I'm vexed. I'm terribly vexed. It's just something I guess you would say in ancient Rome.
In Latin.
In Latin, right. That's true. You would not be speaking in English, yeah.
That's okay. You would definitely use the term vexed in Latin, which might be vexed. Yeah, I don't know. But
so,
anyway, go ahead.
I remember Gladiator. Then Signs came out like a year or two later. That was
great movie.
Great movie. That still holds up. Actually, I like it better as an adult than I did when I was a kid, because more than just the thriller element, there's a lot of really profound faith stuff in that movie that hits pretty good. Mel Gibson gives a pretty good performance in that too. So yeah, Signs. So yeah, I don't know. Kind of grew up watching Joaquin when I was in my teenage years. So he's been with me. And then Walk the Line was sort of his big breakout role that made him a household name, I think, where he played Johnny Cash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Joaquin Phoenix.
He's a good actor. There's no doubt. And I think he's a good actor in this film.
Very committed to his roles, takes it very seriously, maybe too seriously, kind of sometimes in the Shia LaBeouf category of like rubbing people the wrong way, but you know.
Yeah, but it definitely looks like he like weighed 110 pounds for this movie.
Yes. I know. Do you think he looked as thin as he did in the first one? I think he probably did.
I think he did.
Maybe not quite, but like it was close. It was at least in the ballpark.
It was scary. It was like, I hope this guy's all right.
I know.
But I think that's what he was going for.
Yep. So what did you think of him in this movie? Isolating your other quibbles, what did you think of him as an actor, as the Joker in this film?
He was more human than in the last Joker.
Yep. It was definitely more of an Arthur Fleck performance, right? Rather than the other one.
Yeah. So it was kind of like somebody who had done horrible things that was seeking to find love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe redemption.
Yeah. It was like their life was so bad. They had to escape somehow.
Yeah. It was definitely more of a downer performance than the first one. Because the first one is sort of like this leading up to him gaining sort of power and notoriety, and then what happens at the end of it. And then this one is just sort of, he's in jail for most of it, almost all of it, and then he's in court. And so it's just, he's kind of like really sad, like during the whole movie. So it was a little bit more of a downbeat performance, subdued. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not bad. It's good. Yeah.
It's good. He seemed like he had a lot of different faces, which I think was the idea. It's like, so he could be very aggressive, and then the next moment he would be very submissive or passive.
Yeah.
He would be simple almost, and then scheming. Yeah, and then the big issue in the court is this guy have multiple personalities?
Mm-hmm. Remember when he, like, at one point, spoilers, he is becomes his own attorney, and then he does this weird kind of southern drawl Joker voice.
It's like he's in To Kill a Mockingbird or something.
Right.
So you would acknowledge that, like, it was like North Carolina. It's like,
yeah,
Andy Griffith.
So, right.
Now,
right.
Opie.
Matlock. Matlock. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, Matlock. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Andy Griffith. Yeah, Matlock. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought it was funny, though. What was the guy's name? Remember what he wrote down in his notebook? Like, the guy's last name was weird or something. It was not Needles, but like...
Puddles.
Puddles. Yeah. And all he wrote for his lawyer notes was Puddles? As if that's going to
crack the case. That can't be real.
I thought that was funny. Come on. So, I don't know. I mean, look, the guy's not going to get nominated for an Oscar again for this. Remember, he won an Oscar for the first Joker. Joaquin Phoenix did, and much deserved. I don't think he's going to even be nominated again, because it's one of those roles that he's not bad in it, but it's just not the same energy that makes you stand up and go, whoa, what was that? You know, it's just more of a low-key kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then there's Lady Gaga. Now, her first big movie role was A Star Is Born with Bradley Cooper, which I think is an overrated movie, but she is legitimately great in that film. Like, her singing, her acting, rightfully deserved all the acclaim she got for that. Did you like A Star Is Born, or her in it at least?
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't think there's anything wrong with it. I thought it was an interesting movie.
Yeah. I don't know what it was about that movie that didn't... Everyone was raving about it, and I gave it like a B. I thought the ending was atrocious. It was okay. It was okay. But yeah. And then she was in House of Gucci, which I never saw. That was directed by Ridley Scott, but I didn't see that. So here she is. I don't know. Like, I think she was good in this. I really do think she was good in this. I just, like, the one quibble I had was I knew it was a musical going in, and I was expecting there to be more, like, just the songs to be more of, like, a big showcase, you know? Because it's Lady Gaga. You've got, like a great singer who can just belt it out, and then all the songs were very mumbly, and, like, they were just sort of, it's almost like they were just talking with, like, music kind of humming along behind them. That's how all the songs felt to me. So, I don't know. But maybe that's just a personal preference. Because you could also make the argument that that's the whole point, like, is that it wasn't about operatic songs. It was just about them sort of, like, a cadence to their... I don't know. What do you think about that?
I don't know.
Here we go. You hated it so much.
And here's why. Is when you've got to, like, break... In a musical, you basically break out of reality.
Right.
And then everyone suspends their belief. Like La La Land, right?
Mm-hmm. A West Side Story.
And you can, like, get with that. Yeah. In this movie, it's like, you got to, like, I kind of felt like it was distracting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, is there any other, you know, murderer musicals? And I'm like, oh, yeah, like Sweeney Todd or something, right?
Okay, sure, Sweeney Todd.
Is that
Todd,
a murder musical? I think it is.
I think that counts, yeah.
Yeah, Little Shop of Horrors, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a murderous plant, right?
But those have songs, like big songs, and you're like, wow, these just, there was not one song.
And it was mostly
in this
cover
movie.
Songs. It was mostly covers.
Yeah, in this film, right? That's right. What was that? Like, I mean, they're saying the freaking When the Saints Go Marching In again and again. It's just a bizarre choice. I don't know. Like, I really do think maybe there's a case to be made for it being very subtle. They didn't want to, like, do this big break the fourth wall and all dance around the jail or something. But at the same time,
Sonny and Cher kind of thing.
Now, I liked that scene where they had their own, like, show, and I thought that was cool. But I agree that it doesn't quite work, the songs.
Yeah.
And then if the songs don't work, then you've kind of wasted Lady Gaga. Like, why is she there at that point?
Because she's not, there's not a lot of chemistry between those two.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. Yeah.
So, like, and she's not, like, such a great actress that she could be, like, go totally psycho. Like, I wanted somebody, if you're going to, like, have Joker share, you know, have a love interest, it needs to be somebody really complex and creepy.
Who feels unhinged. Yeah.
Yeah, unhinged. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And I felt Lady Gaga was, like, pretended to be unhinged and then would sing a song in a really good voice. She'd be like, "Oh," and then he'd be like, "Oh." And I'd be like, "Oh, yeah." So it was, like, halfway through, I'm like, "Oh, yeah, that's Lady Gaga. That's Lady Gaga. That's Lady Gaga," instead of, like, the character.
Yeah, I think that's a valid critique. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just felt like they wasted her, and I guess. But if they had had bigger songs, would that have helped the movie? Like, if it was like, oh, here we go, and there was, like, really good song. Do you think that would have helped?
No. Why was this a musical? Good Lord.
I don't know.
I know I'm not supposed to ask that because it's like some kind of creative call that somebody made and said, oh, let's make the next one a musical.
Yeah.
I could just see him in the room and somebody was too scared to say, that's insane. You've lost your marbles, Phillips.
Especially when the first one was such a smash hit and wide critical acclaim and Oscars. Like, are you going to be the guy that's like, are you sure?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, this is like Michael Jordan playing baseball, this whole movie. And you're like, okay, all right. He can play some AAA baseball. But that's not why we want to see Michael Jordan. We want to see Michael Jordan be Michael Jordan. And I feel like this, I want the Joker to be the Joker. And I want him to like go crazy and have power and be insane mm-hmm. and like fight somebody. But like, this is just like, what is this? What is this movie? What's the plot? Have we summarized it at all?
Oh, not yet. No.
Good luck to you. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do it because I don't really know what it is.
Well, I settled with you with it last time on that terrible, I think it was Megalopolis. I was like, Tim, describe the plot. So, okay. The plot. I would say it is, so in the first one, of course, Arthur Fleck was just kind of like a dude who was lost in the system and he had serious psychological problems and the funding was not there for the counseling that he needed, for the medication he needed. And so eventually, you know, the system fails him. He goes off his meds and he turns into the Joker on national television and kills Robert De Niro, the talk show host. And that is kind of how we end it. And we assumed that he was then going to become the Joker, and the Joker 2 would be about his sort of rise in Gotham, maybe to set up a showdown with Batman or something. I don't know.
It would have been awesome.
It would have been pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But instead what we got is a movie where he's in jail serving like 5 life sentences and he's real sad and depressed, and then he's mistreated in jail and he goes to his trial and defends himself, and then I think that's the movie. Is that about it? Yeah, I think that. And then he meets Lady Gaga, who plays Lee, and they sing songs that aren't really like great songs, and then
then the plot never develops at all.
That's about it. I know. As I'm saying that out loud, that's not great. It's not great.
I think the problem here is there's no movement in the film mm-hmm. at all.
I like it less the more I'm talking about it.
I know. It's a terrible film. There's a reason why almost every critic hates this film.
Yeah.
Not every critic, but a lot of them.
Okay. I still have some mm-hmm. defending points that we'll get to in a little bit, but Brendan Gleeson was good in this, and we love Brendan
Gleeson.
Always
like
right?
him. There's nothing wrong with that guy.
Yeah.
He just did his job. Showed up, did his job, played a salty Irish cop.
Salty Irish cop. Love
it. I mean, is it really even like acting at that point? I'm like, that probably just is Brendan Gleeson.
They're just like, you want some money to play yourself, basically? That's what it is now.
I would have preferred him to be the Lady Gaga character.
Oh, my God.
Because I think we could get more, you know, more tension out of those scenes.
So like a gay romance develops then between them?
Whatever, man. Just something different. I just don't think there was any chemistry.
So he plays the prison guard. And yeah, as usual, just kills it. Just, you know, he's he has charm, gruffness, perfect. Perfect for this role.
Was his character necessary to the plot of the film at all?
Definitely not.
No, it's an unnecessary character, which I'm like, who let this happen? Like he adds nothing to it.
Yeah. That is true. Although he's funny in parts. Like, I thought it was funny when he tried to like join the choir, you know, in the classroom, and his banter with Joaquin Phoenix is good.
Do you think he's trying to show us the humanity of the Joker by the Joker having a kind of a buddy?
Yeah. I think the whole point of this movie is, which is very brave, is Todd Phillips is sort of subverting all expectations and being like, hey, you wanted the violence. You wanted him to be Joker and start, you know, killing people and being psycho. Well, I'm going to actually give you a very moral take on this, which is he's Arthur Fleck, who made some terrible decisions that he regrets, and he's trying to redeem himself. That's a brave choice. I don't know. Well,
it's like you asked for cupcakes and here's your bran muffin, kids. Like, what's this about?
Well, it's hypocritical, though.
It's a bran muffin.
Listen, it's hypocritical because everyone was really upset about the sugar high of the first movie where they accused him of glorifying violence and, you know, like reveling in hyper-masculine violence. And then all of a sudden, when Phillips does the opposite of that and actually subverts all those expectations, then they're like, where's our violence? That's hypocritical.
That's a bran. You bran muffin, John.
I know. I'm just saying.
You're all, this is just like pizza. That's what we have here. You know, that's cauliflower. That is freaking cauliflower.
It might not taste good going down, but it's good for you. Doggone
it. It's just the cauliflower pizza of Joker movies. That's what I have to say, which is like, you're like, I guess it's pizza. That's like, that's how I feel about it. And I'm like, it's not bad, I guess. It has all the elements and looked like it took a lot of work.
Yes. And one thing I will say is that it looks beautiful. Like the cinematography, we got to give a shout out to Lawrence Scherr, who is the same cinematographer who did the first one. This film looks great. And there is a continuity in the aesthetic of both films that I think really works. And I was just, that was the first thing I noticed was like, wow, this looks beautiful, just like the first one.
Yeah.
It does.
No, I agree with that. I think it looks great. It's just, this is like, once again, if you don't have any tension and there's nothing's going anywhere, it's really hard, even if you put music in mm-hmm. and like show tunes or whatever, it makes it really difficult to have a film people want to watch it.
Yep. Especially, by the way, when you have set up something in the DC universe with the comic book like implications and weight behind it, and then you're basically just throwing a middle finger to everyone and being like, I don't want to do any of that. I want to do this other thing that, you know. It's hard. Tough position for him to be in. I think it's a brave, but I agree that it's the movie no one wanted.
Well, I'll tell you, people are going to think twice before handing Phillips $200 million.
Totally. I mean, DC tried to intervene, and he was like, I don't want you around. He refused to accept help from them and just didn't want anything to do with it. Yeah, so I agree that it's going to be tough for him to finance his next film because this was a box office bomb for sure.
Terrible. We got to have a would you rather section on this movie.
All right. What would it be?
Would you rather watch this movie again or watch Herbie Fully Loaded?
I would rather watch this again.
Not me. Herbie Fully Loaded.
No way. No way.
Yes.
Tim, this is a good, not great film that is enjoyable to watch aesthetically. There's some good performances. And I appreciated the bravery of Phillips and how he switched directions on us. I really do. I stand by it.
All right.
Let's talk about Todd Phillips. So this dude basically grew up making raunchy sex comedies. Road Trip, Old School. This was in like the heyday, you know, when Judd Apatow and all them were like coming out with another one every other week. And it was like, let's go watch a bunch of sex. American Pie really started all of this. And then it was like so profitable that they made all these movies. Now, I will say that his version of the sex comedy was smarter than most. I think Road Trip and Old School were smarter sex comedies than what was coming out at the time.
So I do like Old School, but mostly I think of it as I like Will Ferrell and Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like Will Ferrell, Hank, what is it, Frank the Tank?
Frank the Tank, yeah.
It's just hard not to like him.
It was well written and good acting. Yeah, exactly. And then he made The Hangover. I think the first Hangover movie is a good, fun movie, you know.
The second one I've heard is garbage, but I haven't seen it.
I have not seen the second one, no, but it probably is.
The first one is like hysterical, like you can't stop laughing. It's that good.
And that should have been that. I mean, like, I don't know why you would ever repeat it. Like, what more can you do? But they did many times. I think we're on 3 or 4.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, at least it's keep it. I think it's, yeah, those are fun movies, man. Well, at least the first one. I don't know.
The first the other one. Ones.
Yeah. So, like, that's a good movie. I was like, I remember when it came out, I'm like, I can't watch this. Now I'm like, this is a great movie. We should all watch this movie because it's just silly.
It's silly. Right. Yeah. So I think he was a bit of a cut above what was coming out at the time. And then he switched to more serious fare, like he made War Dogs with Jonah Hill, which I didn't see, but it did receive good critical acclaim. And that was a serious movie. And then he made Joker in 2019, which I still stand by and love. I mean, that's in my top 10 for that year. I think it's a fantastic film. I gave it an A-, and I stand by my A-. I think it's a great movie.
I agree. I get the violence part. But I think if you're like, know that going in, you're like, this is this kind of movie. I think it is good. And it has kind of has that chaos that you see that Joker is supposed to embody.
Definitely.
And this movie does that. Not this movie, but the previous one.
Yeah, the previous one. Now, this movie, then, you know, he just switched directions. And I think, so Quentin Tarantino saw this film, and he is one of the lone people who came out and said he loved it, and that he believes this movie will stand the test of time, and that all of the bashing of it will appear to be incorrect and overblown in like a decade. And I do agree with that. I think one in the future, when you stand these movies side by side and you remove all expectations and what we wanted and DC and comic books and all that, and you just take them for what they are, I think they're very interesting movies side by side. There's no question this is a lesser work than the first Joker, but I think it's a very brave choice to sort of undercut that violent angle and being like, you want him to rise up and be a psychopath. How about a guy who actually regrets what he did and is trying to, you know, switch gears? I don't know. Look, it's not Shawshank Redemption, okay? So I don't want to oversell it, but I do think it's an interesting choice, and you got to give him props for being brave on that front.
Yeah. I mean, the Joker is powerless throughout this movie, which I think is not what we expected.
Yep, definitely not. And it is hard for fans because the first one ends with him really like taking the mantle as the ultimate villain and being literally raised up by the crowds and, you know, doing that blood smile thing that Joker does. So you thought, here we go. He's on his path of ascendancy. And then to get this, it is difficult. But I also kind of just appreciate it. And I like the idea, because we have seen the version that we all wanted. We have seen that a lot. We have seen the whole rise of the villain, like that has been done. So to sort of do something different and have this idea of like, hey, he regrets his choices. And then he realizes that the crowds and all the people, including Lee, Lady Gaga's character, who want him to be this thing, the second that he doesn't do that, the second that he doesn't fulfill those expectations, they all just abandon him and turn on him. Sort of like Todd Phillips, the second that he doesn't do what everyone wanted and become this, like, you know, make his character this iconic thing, then they all turned on him too. And so I think there's a little bit of a symmetry there between Phillips and Arthur Fleck.
Who will stab Todd Phillips for us?
Spoiler alert. Yeah. Agreed.
Who will shank this man for what he did?
The studio definitely wants to. This'll be like, a hit job. It'll be a Goodfellas hit job.
For you, Todd. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
But I'll say the acting is good. Cinematography is still good. Music is not spectacular. The plot could use some work.
You mean the plot could use a plot?
The plot could use a plot. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just have everything be like atmospheric. It has to be like, there has to be movement.
That's fair. That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's talk about some themes if there's enough to talk about.
I have an idea.
Yeah, go ahead.
What if we could get the old Joker to come into Megalopolis and just tear it up? Wouldn't that be a great movie?
Old Joker. What do you mean by old Joker?
Like the one from the previous movie. What if we could just have him be in that Megalopolis movie that we reviewed and like go tear up the whole place with his minions? Like organize those Red Hatters.
I mean, that would be fantastic. I would love to see that.
I want
to
see that movie.
I'm glad you brought up Megalopolis because that's my whole point, is that I do think the criticisms are a little bit overblown on this because, look, we have seen some truly terrible movies this year, Tim. We saw Megalopolis. That was an awful film.
Awful
writing,
film, yeah.
Directing, sloppy editing, everything about that movie looked like it was made by like a 6-year-old, okay? So, and we've seen Long Legs, which is just like the doll in the house.
It seems so miserable.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that those are bad movies. Those are like, wow, just disposable trash. I do not think that you can put this movie in that same category as genuinely a bad film. I just don't. You disagree? You think that it's the same as like those two films and being bad?
I don't see the artistic merit of it. I see that it has a lot of good elements to it.
Okay.
But I think you can't, unless you have a compelling story that people connect to, which to me, the story is not compelling. It's because like, we have no sympathy for the protagonist.
Yeah.
At all. Like, so we can't even feel for him because we don't have any sympathy for him.
Which can work if he's interesting, but he's really not in this version.
Yeah. I mean, he's not even Darth Vader, right? Like,
right.
So you need something he's powerful and wicked.
Or Tony Soprano or whatever. Like, you can have an anti-hero,
right.
But, like, this isn't that.
Yeah. So, like, really, we're just watching some guy smoke for 2 hours.
There's a lot of smoking and being very sad.
Like,
Yeah. He just looks sad and he's smoking. I'm like, really?
And then he mumbles some songs occasionally.
Can we just go hang out outside George Webb?
No. Yeah.
If we want to see old men, sad old men smoking, can we just go bowling? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm with you. You know, Tim, I don't know. Sometimes I convince you a little bit on some movies. You're actually convincing me that maybe this movie doesn't have as much merit as I thought it did.
It was just hard to watch, man. Mm-hmm. We need to start watching. We need a good movie. We've been really...
It's been a tough stretch. I agree. Yeah. That's why I'm going to get us some awards movies. But I will say, if you want an adrenaline rush of a fantastic film, watch that Strange Darlings. Did you write that down, Tim?
You know I have a pen and a pad right here, right?
You could tonight. You could watch that. And I'm telling you, you will be blown away by it. It will make you believe in cinema again.
Okay. Strange Darling.
Yep.
Okay. Done.
All right.
I've been kind of lax in my cinema. I haven't watched a lot of movies lately.
I know. And I've been trying to make a new habit of watching a new movie, like one from this year, every week, like on a Saturday night. So I've been trying to do that, and that's been a little
helpful.
I know.
It's kind of disciplined, man.
New commitment. Yeah. Around my shows. I always watch my shows, but it's just be nice to be like, hey, one movie a week. You know? Why not? So
your telenovelas.
Yeah.
Your soaps.
So, all right. Let's talk about some themes. I will say that in the first movie, we had the theme of like the social services failing Arthur Fleck. And I thought that it was handled with not like a caricature version of it. I thought it was legit. He needed help. The system failed him. And I think that in a similar thing goes on in this one where you talk about the way that we fail our prisoners in our prison system. I think this is a passion of mine. It has been for a long time. I think the way we do prisons in America is very unjust and absurd. Like, we take these people, we strip them of all their dignity and slap a uniform on them and give them a number. And we actually think that, like, how brutal and awful the process is, like the bad food and the prison rape and like all that stuff, like that's just okay because they're criminals and that's part of the punishment. It's a terrible time from the minute you get in there. And I think that's just the wrong way to look at it. It's a very punitive, awful way to look at it. I think the goal of prison should be rehabilitation. We should be actually, it goes back to what we were saying before about not writing people off, about not acting like because they did these things now they have no value and they have nothing to contribute anymore. If we looked at them as people still, then we would have a different system where we're actually trying to help them get back to being members of society. And I think other countries do this well and we do it very badly. Thoughts on that?
No.
No thoughts. All right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's the point of the movie. I think that you could look at like that as something is part of it. Like you could say the courts let him down.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the point of the Brendan Gleeson character, right? Is like, you know, he does mistreat the prisoners and treats them like they're basically, you know,
subhuman.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like, I kind of feel like that's every movie with a, you know, in the prison. Like, I don't feel like that's unique to this film. But I, as far as like, if you want to like identify issues at this film, I guess. I think the first one was so much more overt that the system failed this guy.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I felt like it wasn't as strong of a point.
I agree. They handled it much better in the first one. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I can draw out of this movie. I'm struggling.
You could say that like the alter ego that he uses for the Joker is similar to how we sort of put on our own alter egos to try to be stronger than who we actually are. And I do think there is a sense that we all do that too. We put on a mask to try to mask our insecurities or our, you know, whatever's going on. I remember I've talked about this on the show, but growing up, I sort of put on a mask of being a good Christian boy, and that continued all the way through my 20s. And, you know, there's some, so I do think we do that. So I think his sort of alter ego of the Joker is a reflection of that. And when he stops playing that game, when he doesn't want to wear that mask anymore, it doesn't go well.
He's abandoned, right?
He's abandoned. Yeah. And that often happens when we actually find our true selves and present that to the world. They don't like it because they like our other version a lot better, the fake one.
So I could go there. That's a nice thought that you had.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think and then even I know the title is, you know, what does the title mean, right? Isn't it like a shared delusion or something, or shared dream? Yeah. I don't remember what the translation is.
Something like
is.
That, like two people lost in a delusion.
And it's a psychological condition. It's like they're in one delusion, two people are. So it's like, it's not mass hysteria, but it's shared hysteria. And so who is that? Is it the two sides of the Joker? Is it the Joker and Lady Gaga character? I don't know.
Slash his audience and the people who are clamoring for him to be this thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, are we? Yeah.
And you, Tim, who wants the ultra violence this time and wants him to be the psychopath.
I just want. So what's weird to me is Tarantino, who wants your characters to like stay consistent.
Yeah.
Loves this movie, but the Joker is like a whole new person in this.
Yeah, that is strange. And it doesn't feel like a movie Tarantino would even like, but he definitely did. I don't know.
I like the feel of the movie.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was responding to mostly, is that like it feels right, or like the aesthetics, like I thought successfully drew me in just like the first one. So that's why I was surprised, because I was expecting it to be a train wreck from minute one, and it felt okay.
Well, like the cinematography is really good. Like, remember the scene with like the umbrella scene?
So good. Yeah, absolutely. The colors, yeah.
Yeah, I thought the cinematography was good, all the weird angles. Mm-hmm. But they weren't like, didn't look like you're a film student trying to put a weird angle on it. They just did. And I accepted them, and I was like, oh yeah, of course this. Yeah. So I thought cinematography was a strength in this movie.
Yes. So there's that. And, I don't know, I guess that's all I got. And then we already talked about sort of the glorifying of the violence and the irony of that, but those are the only things I've found. Do you have any other ideas for themes? Anything else? I don't know. There's not a lot there.
Maybe. So, yeah, maybe like the, as we're going through a process of like being our true selves, people might hate us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or turn on us.
Yeah. I've done a lot of research into the Enneagram, and that's something that like you realize that a lot of, but well, you grew up kind of living into this sort of personality. Like, I say that in a negative way, of like this sort of like
persona.
Persona, yeah, that it's a coping mechanism that you learn very young in life. And when you break out of that, you do become a little bit of a different person, and it is a shock to people. If you are a people pleaser a lot of your life, as I have been, and then you start asserting boundaries, the people in your life don't like that. And because they're very used to you doing what they want. And so, yeah, there is a sense I think we can all relate to with that.
Yeah.
But that might be as deep as we get today.
I think what's happening here is we're running out of things to talk about, because this movie doesn't have, that's not a lot there.
Yep. Just like Megalopolis, our poor listeners, twice in a row.
I know. It's what's happening is we've watched two decent directors make two lousy films. We should just do all new filmmakers for the whole year now.
All new filmmakers. Well, what we should do is make sure that we are watching quality art for the rest of our time here. And I will make sure of it, because like, we can't do this anymore. It's too much.
It's too hard on us.
We fulfilled our quota, though, because there was a point, I think, where we were watching too many good movies and we didn't have enough criticism. Now I think we've put that
true.
In.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to this point where it was like, that's the greatest movie. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, because we need something mediocre, maybe.
Well, I would say that's what this is, but I think this is on the higher end of mediocre. But anyway, yeah, agreed. And that's
high
the thing.
Mediocre.
That's the thing about, like, when you watch something that is truly great art, like even this Strange Darling movie, like it is an extreme movie in the sense that there's a lot of violence and it's, you know, like the subject matter is very dark, but even still, it's so well made that you're fired up and you're thinking about different things. And it's just, there's something about, no matter what the genre is, no matter what it is, if it's made well, it is going to provoke thought and it is going to make you like just connect with the universe in a different way after watching it. That's the best way I can say it. And I think that's reflected in how we talk about movies when we are like just turned on by really good art, you know? And when we're not, you get this.
I think story, like the story elements, and we talk about this all the time, but like you can have lousy like tech and have a good movie.
Yes.
Like, so for instance, like, what's it called? The TV glows pink.
Oh,
pink.
I saw the TV glow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I saw the TV glow. Like, good. Actually, like upon reflection, like after we reviewed it, but upon reflection, like I was like, hey, this is a really good movie. And it's really story driven and character driven. And it's got somebody who's trying to take a journey, which this Joker could have had, but it didn't. So I don't think it can go the other way. So I think if you can't like take all the brilliance of Hollywood as far as acting and cinematography and music, and then have a crappy plot and have it work. That's my opinion.
That's a great point. You can have all the aesthetics in the world, but if you don't connect to the characters in a deep way and you don't connect to their journey, you really are, it becomes a hollow shell. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, so I don't know if you remember the movie Traffic, directed by Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah.
Love that movie. I love that movie. Now, mm-hmm. I showed it to my son, and he, you know, did not connect with it in that same way. He was like, I get the technical elements. I get that it's like the cinematography, everything's well made, but I just didn't connect to any of the characters. And, you know, I disagree with that, but that's what we're talking about. If it doesn't penetrate, then it's just like you respect it from a distance. And mm-hmm. that's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, so that's it. We're done with this movie. We wash our hands of it.
Yep. What's your ultimate letter grade and your final thoughts on this?
Okay, I give this one a C.
Okay.
Because it's got all those elements. So I'm like, this isn't, like, you could watch this, I guess. And then my final thoughts on it would be probably just stick to the first Joker.
All right. Well, look, like I said, I think this is not a perfect movie by any stretch, but I do not think it's a bad movie. I've seen bad art this year. Long Legs Michelopoulos, looking at you. This is not in that category for me. Those were C movies. I am going to give this a B. It is a B movie for me. The first one, A minus. This one is a B. I think that it will be looked on more favorably in the years to come. I agree with Tarantino on that front. But if you would like a comic book villain art that actually like shows the rise and ascendance of a comic book villain and in the DC universe, what I would highly recommend as counter programming is The Penguin on Max. I have seen all of it. I mentioned this a few weeks back, but I've now seen the entire show. The season finale just released last week. They totally land the plane with a great ending. It is definitely the best show I've seen this year, and I would give that entire series an A. So if you're looking for the opposite of this, go watch The Penguin on Max. Colin Farrell.
Not Mr. Popper's Penguins.
Not the Mr. Penguin. Popper's Penguins.
Yes, as I watched.
Although
recently,
I'm sure your daughters would give that an A.
Of course. It's got Jim Carrey. They're happy with that.
So I really would recommend that show. You too, Tim. It's very Sopranos-ish and very like, it's one of those like comic book movies that does not feel like a comic book movie. Like if they didn't mention Gotham, it would just be a regular, you know, sort of mob show. And it's really good.
All right. I will check it out.
Cool.
That's my commitment to you and to the listeners.
All right. The movie is Joker, Folie à Deux. It is playing on a TV screen near you, not a theater, as Tim found out. Is no longer in theaters. It had a very short run, but it is streaming. So I think by this point you can rent it. You don't have to buy it. But yeah, check it out. Think for yourself. I think it is worthy of a rental. I will say,
there
I will stand by that. Yes. So Tim, like I said, we're in Oscar season again. I'm going to find some movies for us. We're going to get this train back on the track. We're going to be, you know, start talking about good art again. We're going to talk some good themes. The one I'm most looking forward to that we will review before the Oscars is The Brutalist. Everyone that has reviewed this film has said it is an American epic, one of the best films in decades, and that it's going to sweep the Oscars this year. So I really...
Where do I watch it?
It's not out yet. It's going to be so in December or January, it'll finally hit us. We're going to do it. That's that four-hour movie I was talking about that has intermission and actual intermission in the theater and stuff.
But oh, Lord.
I'm telling you, Tim, it's going to be worth it. I feel good about this one.
All right. Yeah.
And Conan O'Brien is hosting the Oscars this year. How about that? Conan O'Brien.
That's weird.
I love Conan. Do you, you're not a fan?
So I was a Letterman guy for a long time. Obviously, okay. But he basically retired now.
Yep.
And I found Conan to be more of like the Letterman was more the Midwest down home. He can have a cruel edge, but not much. I feel like Conan is the Harvard boy that's got a little bit of a cruel edge to him. Now, sure. I find him funny. Find him highly funny, but I think he's a little mean and a little like he's got an elitist way to him. So if you're asking me my real opinion, that's what I think.
Hey, that's okay. I grew up, me and my wife, we grew up watching him on the, like, when it was still the Late Late Show. It was kind of like the best kept secret, you know? They would do just this crazy stuff at night, and, like, it was still, you felt like you were in it because no one else was talking about it, and you were just kind of on the inside. So, anyway, I'm interested to see his take. Jimmy Kimmel has been doing it for a while, so it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. So, my overall thing is, yes, I think I was stating that too strongly. I do like him. Yeah, I do. He has a little edge to him.
I get what you're saying. And he definitely did come from that Harvard elite sort of like comedy school, which is a very different vibe than a Letterman.
Yeah. So I miss Letterman. That's all I have to say about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see you next time, dear listeners. Thanks for putting up with two pretty awful shows for two fairly substandard movies. But we'll hopefully be back with better art for you. Until then, keep the faith, my friends, and we will see you next time.